2 months ago, politics in the Commonwealth of Virginia came to a screeching halt. It started when the far-right media outlet Big League Politics published a racist image from Governor Ralph Northam's medical school yearbook page. The governor backtracked on initial claims that he was in the photos, but later admitted to wearing blackface in another incident when he was younger. Then, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax was accused of sexual assault by multiple women. And followed by the Attorney General Mark Herring, who also admitted to wearing blackface in college. All three top Democrats in the state were embroiled in scandal at the time, and loud calls for their resignations, especially Northam's, erupted in Virginia and beyond. But today, all three remain in office, and after a period of hiding, Northam is reemerging for business as usual as governor. So we have Corey D.B. Walker, a professor at the University of Richmond, to help us break this down. How are you, Corey?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm okay. Thank you. And kind of interested in why we haven't seen any consequences here. You know, Governor Ralph Northam seems to have or is reemerging politically recently. And I'm wondering how that is being taken by Virginians, particularly black residents.
Well, most Virginians are still asking for the governor to resign. The Congressional Black Caucus here in the Virginia legislature continues to maintain and hold its position. Most of the congressional delegation continues to maintain their position that the governor should resign. However, over the past couple of months, what we've seen is the governor reemerge on the political scene and attempt to conduct business as usual.
What about Attorney General Mark Herring? What is the position on him right now?
Well, Mark Herring's position, most individuals had not asked for his resignation. And Mark Herring, because he came out and confessed and because of the way in which he handled the situation, and there were no images, public images of it, so it wasn't seared in the public imagination. And Mark Herring has a bit of a strong progressive legislative stance. We haven't seen any calls for his resignation, and he's continued to do his work in an admirable manner.
You know, one of the things that we've been talking about, not just on this show, but in the country over the past couple of years, is racism, specifically American racism and our past with that racism. And I'm wondering, how were these two men able to just, I mean, did they just wait the scandals out, hoping that this would blow over? And if so, how do you feel about that?
I think that's part of the American calculus in terms of politics. It is see if one can wait the rush of the scandal as soon as it breaks, see if you can hold your position, see if you can offer some sort of apology, some sort of mea culpa publicly, and then you move on from there. However, what it does do is it sets a precedent for state politics that in matters around race and in matters around racial animus, you may just have to just sit out and wait for a little while and then see if you can't continue a few weeks or a few months later.
I'm going to ask a specific question about black residents in Virginia, but I'm sure this can extend to any resident of Virginia who feels that these images were racist. Doesn't that approach take black constituents for granted in many ways?
Well, there's a way of looking at it, and I think African-Americans have made a political calculus on it. And in many ways, you have to look at the politics on the ground. If we had the resignation of all three of the leaders of Virginia state government, then we would have had a Republican in office. And the Republican Party, as we've seen in Virginia over the past few years, have not been friends to African Americans. So there was a pragmatic split in terms of how do we deal with this as a political matter, and then how do we deal with this as a matter around culture, redress, and responsibility.
Corey, I want to turn a minute to the other scandal that's happened in the state of Virginia. Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax has been accused by two women of sexual assault. Both of those women were interviewed by CBS this week. And I want to play a clip of one of those women, Vanessa Tyson, in her interview with Gail King.
I hoped that there would be some sort of action. My concern is that you have someone in a position of leadership who has the ability to affect legislation on how these issues will be handled, and he himself is a predator.
Where does Fairfax stand with Virginians today?
I think the lieutenant governor is in a very precarious situation. What we've seen in terms of the two interviews from Dr. Tyson and Ms. Watson, as well as the inability of the lieutenant governor to deal with this situation in a manner that is very responsive, in a manner that is highly indicative of the situation that we're in as a society and our Me Too moment. And the lieutenant governor using the language of lynching around this really does not bode well and really replays some of the more deleterious images that we have in American public life. And this hasn't played well throughout Virginia. There have been calls for his resignation. There have been recently, as of last week, there was an extensive column in the Richmond Times-Dispatch around violence against women and violence against African-American women, calling on the lieutenant governor to respond to this in not just a manner in which, let me go out and take a polygraph, but the lieutenant governor has to resign. He's lost a legitimacy and the ability to represent the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Corey, let's expand this, because the Democratic Party has also had its own issues with its own Me Too moments. I'm thinking Al Franken, more recently Joe Biden, although just to be clear, that's not an accusation of sexual assault, but an accusation of inappropriate behavior. What is the lesson here for Democrats at the national level?
Well, what the lesson for Democrats at the national level is that these issues are not ephemeral issues. These are not ancillary. These are core issues that affect the party. And if the party wants to identify with the insurgent movement that's growing throughout the nation around equality, radical equality for African Americans, for women, for minorities, if the party wants to stand up for social justice in a robust sense, particularly on matters of the economy and on matters of immigration, that it has to pay very close attention to these issues, and it has to be more than just a policy position or a rhetorical statement.
I mean, it seems particularly hypocritical from a political standpoint, at least. And I'm wondering, is this going to play out with Virginia voters?
Well, I think Virginia has a great progressive heritage. I look at some of our national figures, Representative Bobby Scott, the way in which he's continued to stand at the forefront. We have some great statewide leaders, particularly thinking of State Senator Jennifer McClellan. So I think we're seeing some movements, some very strong progressive movements in and around Virginia. What Virginia has to do to solidify that is it has to make a stand on where the governor, lieutenant governor, and the attorney general go from here. It can't be just a stasis. It can't be, well, the governor is going to stay in office for the next 4 years and the lieutenant governor is going to stay there, because what will happen is Virginians will then have to figure out, where does it move from here? Does it just continue to just say, well, we just want power to stay in power? Or is it, do we want power to do something to affect a broad and deep democratic society that we aspire towards?
Corey D.B. Walker is a professor at the University of Richmond. Thanks so much, Corey.
Thank you.